The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of bin misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deake speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
Apologies again for a late start from me, Will. Half an hour before the show started, I'm in the office prepping everything, and I get a message, a phone call from my daughter upstairs, and she says, cookies. And I'd forgotten that I'd promised her that we were going to make cookies earlier in the day. And although I didn't have much time, I was like, this could be a turning point in our relationship. When she's on a therapist's couch in 20 years' time, and she'll be like, I'll never forget that time my father promised to make cookies with me. And then he didn't because he was recording TOEFOP. TOEFOP, I curse that damn name my entire life.
You know what the thing is? We should just drop in some Cats in the Cradle in the background.
Yeah. I got to say, it was the most rushed. I had plans. Like, I actually went out this morning and bought ingredients. Like, we're going to do a big, you know, roll the dough and all that kind of stuff. And she's got these little cookie cutters. But because I had limited time, I was like, let's just go to the healthy cookies because I can put them together with like three ingredients. Get me a banana. Get me a banana and some eggs. No, it was just almond flour, coconut oil, and chocolate chips. And thrown together with haste. I don't even know what shape they'll take when they come out of the oven.
Okay, so here's I've got a couple of questions. So yeah. Where did cookies come from? Because, like, mate, you're in fucking Australia. It's not fucking cookies. It's fucking bickies. It's biscuits. That's what your daughter should be rolling out, some bickies or some biscuits. What's she saying cookies for?
Well, because she has a little toy set, which is cookies. It's like a little, you know, the plastic cookie cutters, and it's like says cookie on the box. So we make plastic pretend cookies when we were playing in her room, and she wanted the real deal.
Australian product or an American product that's been shipped to Australia?
Oh, what do you reckon?
Is there not any homegrown biscuit cutter? Like, is there not a market for biscuit cutters instead of cookie cutters?
Is this the hill you really want to die on that we've imported too
much? Yeah, I've decided this is the hill that I'm going to die on. Absolutely.
We did a Halloween episode last week. Where was your outrage then?
No, this is what's got me. This particular issue that young children in Australia are being raised to say cookies. Like, I'm not even sure the Cookie Monster should be shown on Australian TV. I think it should be redubbed. You know how, like, they have local content laws? Mm. I think in Australia, it should be called the Bicky Monster, and they redub it. They get, like, Angus Sampson or something to redub, and it's just like, Bickies.
I think that has permeated the wider Australian culture. Mm. Like, you go into bakeries and stuff like that, and you'll see they'll have signed up for cookies. My local bakery definitely does.
No, there's been a cookie takeover. I noticed it recently.
Yeah.
And I'm fine. I actually don't care one way or the other. But I do think it's for me, I always loved the fact that, like, in Australia, biscuits are cookies. Or, like, you know, but like in England, they're biscuits also. And you were always like, well, that's our English, you know, background, right? Is biscuits.
Yeah.
It's the Queen's English that we speak in Australia. And we eat biscuits, not cookies. And then you go to America and you hear that they have this other thing called biscuits, which is not like biscuits at all. It's like maybe a scone.
Yeah.
At best. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then their scone isn't really like a scone. It's more like a rock.
Like the rock. And yes, it's been 10 episodes since we mentioned The Rock. Thank you, Will. The quota is met.
Well, we got there.
But I think cookies is a helpful distinction, right? Because if you say, hey, do you want a cookie? You know that's going to be sweet. Hey, do you want a biscuit? Well, that could be like anything.
You know what? And the other thing is, like, when you do it all for the noogie and then you can't take that bicky and shove it up your ass.
I did it all for the brisket. I did it all for the whiskers. No, it doesn't quite work.
Hey, speaking of Fred Durst, before we get into TBC, this is like a, I don't think this is a good week to have a conversation on this because I know we've got like a big mailbag and we need to get through some letters. But have you watched Woodstock 99?
No. I heard someone describe it as the most anxiety-inducing documentary they'd seen in a while, and I just haven't been in the headspace for something that's going to make me feel anxious.
Yeah, okay. So this, let's put this on the table.
Okay.
Whenever you feel in the headspace to watch Woodstock 99, let's talk about it on the next episode after that.
Okay.
I could describe it to you, but I just think you wouldn't understand the full horror of it. Like, you have to see it to believe it. It is, and I would say to anybody, this is our book club version. Any listeners out there, like, I mean, it is anxiety-inducing, particularly if you've ever enjoyed going to a music festival. But this documentary is off the hook, and particularly that era of, like, nu metal and that crossover and what that generation was and these young men who grew up to be the Make America Great Again generation. Like, you see it there. Like, yeah, this thing, Woodstock, has gone from being this, you know, identified with one particular brand of like music and movement and community, and it gets taken over by like this young, white, entitled, angry, and they don't know what they're angry about. And then Limp Bizkit come out. Anyway, watch it.
Well, no, we can talk about it a little bit, because I have heard a lot of takes on it. I've listened to a lot of people discuss it. And I was listening to the Rolling Stone podcast where they talked about that link that is made between the red hats of, you know, Fred Durst to the red hats of MAGA. And the journalist saying he thought that was a particularly tenuous link to make. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you'll understand from watching this is it's not that these kids were necessarily Limp Bizkit fans. They were Korn fans. They were Red Hot Chili Peppers fans. They were Rage Against the Machine fans. Like, but there was a particular brand of person, like whether they were wearing red hats or not, that became red hats.
What,
that you can see at this festival.
What's the wildest either festival or concert experience you've ever been to where you actually felt, ooh, this is a bit dangerous now?
Well, unfortunately, because we're speaking on the day that it's come out that 8 people at this stage have died at a Travis Scott concert in the US. I was at the Sydney Big Day Out when
Limp Bizkit,
where she died in the mosh pit.
Jessica, yeah.
So Jessica, I could never pronounce her last name, unfortunately. But the Big Day Out series, they made a little podcast about the Big Day Out, which is really fantastic, and her family interviewed on it. And I just think it's a really, if you want to know, like, you know, more about that story, please listen to that podcast, because I think that's a good way to find out. Documentary is very much like that Big Day Out, like, podcast. That's what it feels like, except that at this thing that once you see what happened and how it happened, you won't believe that they ever were allowed to have a festival of any kind ever again. And also, you won't believe that we just aren't talking about this all the time.
Yeah.
It just goes so badly from the start and continues to go badly that I can't believe that when I was watching it, like, Amy and I were both watching it just going, I can't believe this is the first time. Like, I'd heard it was a shit show. Like, I mean, I remember hearing that Woodstock 99 didn't work and blah, blah, blah. But to see the full extent of how badly it and society all fell down together over that weekend is, it's stunning. Like, yeah, absolutely. That person who said anxiety inducing. Absolutely. Like, the thing that Amy and I keep saying to each other was like, but why didn't they leave?
Yeah.
Like, that's there are so many, like, if you looked back over the red flags, maybe not red hats, but the red flags that were seen that weekend, like, and some of it with very disastrous consequences, by the way. Like, some of it is funny, but some of it is absolutely not funny at all. There was like a heap of sexual assault and violence and all these sort of things. So, like, but then there's this other aspect of it where at the end, like, again, this doesn't really spoil anything. Essentially, by like day 4, like, they've just ripped the entire place down and burnt it. Like, while shows are happening, like, they're literally tearing down, you know, the towers where like the palings off the wall, and then crowd surfing on these palings, and then just lighting, pushing everything over and lighting it on fire. And there is a small part of you that's like, well, that's fucking something. Something happened. Like, you just, it's like an experiment.
Right. Stanford prison experiment or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it is that Lord of the Flies thing. You're like, oh, a weekend.
Yeah. It doesn't take much.
If you just deprive people of sleep, deprive people of food, and you have the, like, heady mix of, like, you know, things that are absolutely firing them up. Like, people, like, they're, again, there's so many things to talk about when you actually watch it, so none of this is, like, going to spoil any of that. But they designed it So for the 4 days, right, everyone's camping there, everyone's staying there. Like, sewage is fucked on the first day. Like, on the first day, people are, like, jumping around in puddles of what they think is mud. Like, they're recreating the original Woodstock, and it's clearly fucking feces. By the second day, the clean water is all gone because people are now bathing in the fucking clean water. So what you're meant to drink out of, people are fucking showering in and bathing in. Like, it goes to shit so quickly on the first day that, like, Amy and I were both like, because we were asking ourselves, like, when would we leave? Like, Rage Against the Machine weren't on until day 3 or 4. So I was trying to go, how long would I have convinced myself that it was worth staying for Rage Against the Machine? And I would have been out first night. Right. No fucking doubt. As soon as the toilets stopped working, I'd be like, fuck this. I am out of here. This is going to get to a terrible place. But you'll love this. So just two programming decisions that just, like, because the guys organizing it, again, as you'll see, just did a terrible job. Like, made a bunch of terrible decisions. Did not know what they were dealing with. They had 3 female acts on for the entire weekend. So, like, you've got Rage Against the Machine. You've got, like, fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers, like, Korn, like, you know, all these, like, fucking huge bands. They have 3 female acts. Do you know or could you guess who the 3 female acts are? It's 1999.
What milieu?
I will say this. They're all well-known female acts. Like, they were all household names at the time, I would say.
Are they individual acts or bands or like, a mix of both?
Look, the clue is that they were very unlike the rest of the lineups. Oh. So, yes, not female singers on big bands. Solo female artists singing music that did not really fit with what was programmed for the rest of the festival.
So pop stars.
Yeah, well, pop-ish, yes. Like, pop adjacent, yeah.
You tell me. I don't know.
One of them was homeless and lived in a car for a while. Does that give you any clues?
Jewel.
Okay, so Jewel played. So once you've got Jewel, if I told you there are another 2 Jewel-esque artists, can you now narrow in on who they might be?
Cheryl Crow.
2 out of 3.
PJ Harvey.
Okay, Cheryl Crow. No, PJ Harvey's too alternative. So think about
cool.
What you've got now is Jewel, massive crossover, like, alternative folky star. You've got Cheryl Crow. Well done. Nailed that. Who's your other female star of that sort of generation who is alternative enough to play an alternative music festival but also poppy enough to have a bunch of hits? Probably the most well-known still of those 3 people.
Oh, interesting.
Even though, like, she isn't currently, like, necessarily releasing, like, music that you know, like, she's just probably a bit more prominently well-known. She was the more iconic person of that era, even than Jewel and Cheryl Crow.
Oh, shit. I don't know. Once you take PJ out of the question, who is the... Is she like the mainstream PJ?
Well, Charlie, can I... Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
give me a hint.
Like, well, imagine, I don't know, like, it was your wedding day, right?
Right, yeah. And... yeah, okay, it's Alanis Morissette.
It's Alanis Morissette.
Thank you.
I was going to say, imagine you got 10,000...
Yeah, too much of a clue. Wedding day was perfect. That was just a nice little sousson where I could take a bite and get the flavour. Well done.
So that's their 3 female acts they have for the whole weekend. So, like, none of the fans of the other bands are going to give them a good reception.
No.
Like, but you're also doing nothing to mix up the energy in the lineup. But this is my favourite bit. So people hadn't slept very much because the reason is they had a rave tent, but the rave tent only started when the other bands finished at like 11:30, 12 at night, and then just went right through the night. So there's just this footage of people who've been out in the sun drinking and taking drugs all day because they weren't checking for drugs at the door. And so they've been drinking and taking drugs, and then they go to this all-night rave and just go straight through. And then if I had not left the night before, I definitely would have left the next morning.
I mean, even as you're describing it, I'm actually getting like that little butterflies in my tummy, a bit of heart palpitations, because I've been at festivals that have been run completely fine and it's got to day 2 or day 3 where I'm like, I want to get out of here. Like, I don't care like how well organized it is. And the one, I mean, I often think about The Simpsons, like for everything they skewered about society so accurately, I think the one lasting thing for me is they got mob mentality. Every time the people of Springfield go crazy and just like break down in 3 seconds. I reckon The Simpsons nailed that's exactly what we're like. It does not take much of a push before we all descend into madness.
I think that is a great observation about The Simpsons too. I really do feel like it's almost the most accurate thing that they got. like, or that they do just uniquely better than anybody else. And it's so true. And that's what this weekend is, absolutely. It's like, if it was set in Springfield, you'd be like, yep, that's what would have happened.
Yeah. It's the most cynical of takes of humanity. Because that is, if you say you get a bunch of people together for a music festival, what could go wrong? The most cynical thing you could say is exactly what happened at Woodstock 99. Like, yeah. Day one, it's all going to go to shit. Literally.
And there was 500,000 people there. 500,000 people. Like, even that amount of people is just horrible.
All right, I'll get to it. But in the meantime, as you mentioned, we have a bulging mailbag stretching back to October. So I thought, let's just fly through these so we can get a bit of parity, because I have read some of these in advance, and I think the further we get away from the question, the more we'll forget what they're asking. It's not so the case with this first one, which is an evergreen question. This is from Xander. Hey, Charlie and Will. Hope the hip is well for you, Will, and fatherhood is going well for you, Charlie. I've got a child, you have a hip. That's the that's how we're equitable.
I made my sore hip some cookies just before the podcast.
Right. It is the same thing. I'll get right into it. Do you guys remember the movie Tremors from 1990 starring Kevin Bacon? Yes, one of my favourites from that period.
I would say I remember the movie existing, but like, I could not tell you one thing that happens in Tremors off the top of my head.
Xander says, I found out they're still making sequels to this movie, and the seventh one came out in 2020. The plots of the recent movies are definitely ridiculous and worth a Wikipedia read. Keep up the good work, guys. So I used to work in a video store. It's part of my mythology, like me and Tarantino. And Tremors was like...
Kevin Smith. Right. Oh, no, Kevin Smith was a convenience store, right?
But worked next to a video store.
That's right.
Yeah. And Tremors was one of like my go-tos if I had to take something home. It is a brilliant film, and it was that era when studios would back weird original ideas and put maybe 20 million, 30 million into it, because it's a special effects B movie, but with a big budget and a big star. It's fantastic. It's really good. I would highly recommend. I reckon you would love it. You could go back and watch it now, and because it does occupy that, it's a comedy. It's like Shaun of the Dead. It's a horror comedy, like a creature feature with these giant worms that live underground and attack you. And it is the perfect balance of scares, laughs, and adventure. It's almost like, I'd say, the perfect type of film like that. I think they made it into a series recently, or they did a pilot with Kevin Bacon as like the producer, and it didn't get picked up. I haven't seen any of the sequels, but I cannot imagine that they would be anything near. That first film is almost perfect. I would put it almost in the same category as Ghostbusters in terms of...
Wow, yeah, really?
It's really that good. It's almost pitch-perfect performance from Kevin Bacon. And then you've got Michael Gross, the dad from Family Ties, playing this like... Because it's set in like Arizona, the desert. It's this small community of people who get attacked by these giant earthworms, like earthworms the size of whales living underground that suck them under the ground. And he and his wife, who I think is Reba McEntire, the country and western singer, play these two rednecks who have stockpiled weapons, and it's like their time to shine. Like, they go to their bunker and it's just filled with all this weaponry. And to see the dad, you know, from Family Ties, who played like this lefty hippie, then play like a redneck gun nut, it's brilliant. So yes, highly recommend you check out Tremors. Have not seen any of the sequels. Have I sold you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, if anybody isn't sold by that, then they're not buying anything. Well, it's like, that was like, that was a good sell. Like, and I've really never heard anybody else be this enthusiastic about the movie Tremors.
Well, there's a little primer. If you want to watch a YouTube video to kind of get you up to speed on what you're about to watch and why it's great, Red Letter Media do a review, like a 40-minute review of Tremors. And it's a great little kind of primer for watching the actual film, because they just sort of highlight like what these guys did with miniatures and the balance of comedy and horror and all that kind of stuff. It's funny. I was actually thinking about Tremors the other day, because I've been watching the trailer for the new Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters Resurrection, Ghostbusters Revelation, Ghostbusters Retribution. And it's so weird to see Ghostbusters, which was a Saturday Night Live comedy essentially, where you had, you know, just some buddies from Saturday Night Live making this supernatural comedy where it felt like they were riffing the whole time and it was all a bit silly, and you got Bill Murray kind of undercutting, you know, the dramatic premise whenever he's in a scene. And now you see the trailer for the new one and it's like Steven Spielberg directed it. It's like the wonder of the proton packs and, you know, what did your grandfather Egon leave for you in the basement? It's like, that's not the tone of the first film. at all. The first film's like an out-and-out comedy, right?
I mean, I guess so, yeah. I mean, I think so. Like you said, it's a sketch. Like, I guess this would be the equivalent of like an origin story for the two dudes from A Night at the Roxbury, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, totally. It's so reverent. Like in the trailer, you know, it's the granddaughter of Egon, you know, finding out her dad was a Ghostbuster, as if like finding out he was Batman or something, like pressing a secret button and the proton pack pops up. And it's like, this is this trend we're in right now of this nostalgia kind of trip. And it's like, I'm all for that. Like I was like looking excited for that Flash trailer with Michael Keaton because I'm like, I recognize that. But I don't know that turning Ghostbusters into Captain America makes any sense, does it?
I mean, I want to see that. I want to see Christopher Nolan's Ghostbusters. I want to see it get properly dark.
That's a pretty good idea, actually. If you got, well, that was like what we were talking about with Crocodile Dundee. Take that silly extended stretch premise and get super serious with it. I think that would be good. Christopher Nolan's Ghostbusters would be awesome, actually. Or right. David Fincher's Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Any film bro director. Darren Aronofsky's Ghostbusters.
But I think so. Like, I mean, if you're going to go that far, go the whole hog.
Who is there a director, like one of those guys ever done comedy? Like, I guess Christopher Nolan has bits of comedy. Like Michael Caine during the Batman films was like sort of comic relief. And he's not like known for it. Heath Ledger was kind of a comedic performance. Do you reckon he could handle the comedy elements of it, Christopher Nolan? I mean, I know we're doing it dark, but you still need to acknowledge, like, Bill Murray's going to have a cameo. So if he was like the Michael Caine character, just coming in and, you know, a wry kind of comment here and there, just enough comedy not to make it silly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. You don't want, like, Taika Waititi's Ghostbusters. Although I'd be happy to see Taika Waititi's Ghostbusters, by the way. Maybe like it. I'd just like him to take it. Like if Taika got Ghostbusters, he like sets it in New Zealand.
You just want one. Like you just New want Zealand. We do in the shadows with Ghostbusters. You want to mash up.
But they're Ghostbusters now.
All right. Next bit of mail is from Bruce. Greetings, chaps. Your recent talk on workwear like Hard Yakka and King G becoming de rigueur by rap stars reminded me that David Bowie was always ahead of the times.
Now, can I just say, I would have gone with de rigueur.
Oh,
but you go de with de rigueur?
You probably said it right. I'll wait for Adam Spencer to correct me. Adam Spencer's media watch. He didn't correct me on the Vortex or Apex last week, so I think he must have missed the episode. You'll catch up. In the mid-80s, Bruce was working in an Arnley surplus store in Melbourne that also sold camping gear and workwear. In walked David Bowie, who was on his Glass Spider tour. You're probably too young for the Glass Spider tour, I imagine.
I was.
Bowie browsed around with his bodyguard, who looked and sounded like a Cockney wanker. And he's capitalized Cockney wanker as if it's like a character in a script. So Cockney wanker. let's say it's just Michael Caine. He's actually, the reason he's capitalized is Cockney Wanker was a character from Viz magazine.
Oh, okay, sure.
I'm not familiar with Cockney Wanker, but in my mind, he's got Michael Caine's voice. At one point, a young girl asked David Bowie for an autograph. Mr. Bowie looked at his bodyguard, who looked at the girl, and he said, "Not now, love." Mr. Bowie then turned to the girl and said, "Not now." That's my is that an accurate Bowie two-word impression?
I mean, not quite, not but not terrible. Like,
"I'm sorry, love, I can't now." "No, David Bowie." "I can't, not now." Sorry. I mean, David Bowie is the one guy you can impersonate by saying his name, David Bowie, isn't he? "It's not now, love. I'm David Bowie. I can't. Sorry, love." He said this with a sad look on his face, as if to say, "There will obviously be another time in which I would, but not now. Sorry, but my bodyguard is rather strict on the matter." Perfect. That's exactly how a celebrity should use bodyguard. Don't be pushing teenagers in the face when they get too close. Allow the teenager to ask the question and then have the bodyguard play bad cop and you play good cop. So then the teenager works away still with a positive impression of meeting you, right?
Yeah, you're like, "Oh, sorry, mate. No. I'm not a old school bodyguard. I'm an emotional bodyguard." "Oh, you know, this number that I wear here, that's my EQ. I have a high emotional intelligence and I use it in these situations. I just take the bad juju, I soak it up. David's fine. There's never a situation. We diffuse it before it happens."
To my astonishment, David Bowie ended up buying a bunch of Hard Yakka and King G workwear. Mm. As he went to pay with his credit card, I said to him, "Sorry, I'll need your autograph for this." He gave me a wry smile. Making David Bowie give me a wry smile is the greatest achievement of my life. And I have four children. Nah, that's okay. Later in the week, the news showed David Bowie on stage in the workwear after the weather. "I sold him those clothes," I said to my housemates. "Oh, bullshit," they replied. I've looked at some concert footage of this tour online and I haven't seen him wearing those clothes. So maybe it was a rehearsal. If anyone else can remember, please share. So I read this letter to Jem because she's a big Bowie fan. And she says that she remembers that era and he did wear a lot of kind of khaki, sort of more, you know, like what your King G workwear stuff would look like, short sleeve. And I think it was when he had his peroxide blonde hair. I mean, I'm sure there's many faces he had the peroxide blonde hair. But in my head, I can see him wearing like a work shirt with blonde hair around the mid-80s. Does that sort of ring a bell for you?
I mean, again, like we don't have the one person we really need in this situation, which is Justin Hamilton, who would know absolutely what day and what outfit it was. So it's weird that we're stumbling. Like Justin would listen to us stumble through this in the same way as Adam Spencer listens to us stumbling through maths. That's basically what is happening right now. We're out of our depth. But I do kind of, I also kind of have that memory as well.
Yeah. You know the one, you know, I think there's a music video or there's a song where he's wearing like a khaki shirt.
And kind of maybe rolled up at the sleeve. Am I going too far? Is it rolled up at the sleeve?
Podcast Mike, can you just Google David Bowie, Glass Spider Tour, mid 80s, and see if there is a photo of him in what would be like a Army Disposals kind of shirt, like a khaki shirt, long sleeve, short sleeve, name tag, just anything that confirms our bias. I should mention on that Hard Yakka thing that I went to one of those hipster vintage clothing fairs while I was in the Gold Coast, and a hipster had a Hard Yakka cap for sale for $60, like a secondhand red Hard Yakka cap. I think I took a photo of it. I put it on the Instagram page, the Tofop Instagram page. And I was like, shit, maybe we thought we were being ahead of the curve, like treating it, this blue collar workwear is like fashion, but maybe it's already happened. Because I said to myself, this is insane. I was going to buy it as a joke, but I wasn't going to pay $60. And then I jumped on eBay and looked up the same hat, and that was generally the price point, was between sort of $40 and $60 for a red Hard Yakka hat, which I would have sworn if you'd asked me like today that you could just go to Bunnings and get.
Well, I can see David, Podcast Mike's dropped in a couple of images into our chat, and a couple of them I couldn't download because they thought the program thought that they might be suspect. And so Podcast right. Mike's clearly just sending.
I've opened one of them. That's definitely wrong because Podcast Mike, we said King G or Hard Yakka workwear. What Bowie's wearing in this shot appears to be a spacesuit. It's like a puffy silver and black leather jumpsuit with some kind of like crotch strapping. That's the complete opposite of what we were looking for. Wanted blue collar workwear. I'll see if I can open the other one. No, I'm getting the same security work. No, they're both wrong. Podcast Mike, you have really dropped the ball on this one. That's absolutely incorrect.
Well, also, I should mention that our correspondent, who's clearly invested in this being the case, in fact, sold the workwear in the first place, has already done a lot of Googling and hasn't found anything. So it's probably with that knowledge that we got, it's hard for us to then say to Podcast Mike, hey, in 30 seconds, could you do your own research and outdo this guy who has been invested in this story and been trying to track this down for years?
This is the Tofop version of Squid Games. It's like, Podcast Mike, find this rare photo of David Bowie or you'll be killed. He sent another photo in. No, that's like 60s Bowie. He looks 18 years old, and he's in all denim, so you're getting closer, but that's the wrong era. So just keep trying. We'll give you to the end of the episode before he Squid Games you.
And what is your understanding of what Squid Gaming someone is, by the way? Have you watched Squid Game?
Yeah, I've watched the whole series. Yeah, the Squid Game is like, you know, you set a task in which there's normally some kind of twist to the game, and if you lose, you get shot in the head.
So to Squid Game someone means to shoot them in the head, is what you're saying?
Well, like put them in an impossible situation. Well, you know, they have to complete a task. They've chosen to be in this kind of horrendous death game.
I'm not sure that Podcast Mike has chosen to be in this horrendous death game. I think he signed up to produce a podcast.
Well, Podcast Mike, you can exit the recording at any time you like, but I bet you he won't because it's Squid Game. To get Mike to work on the show, I slapped him. I met him at a train station and slapped him in the face a bunch of times. Did you watch Squid Games?
No, we started watching it. But I've been okay. We're talking about K-pop and South Korea on Gruen this week because it's just become like the country itself has become very popular off the back of like Squid Game and K-pop, you know, BTS and Blackpink and these bands that are hugest bands in the world at the moment. And so we're looking at it from a marketing and advertising point of view, but it's meant that I've had to read a few articles about it, and it's just the success of Squid Game internationally, like for that country, like it's their Crocodile Dundee. It's a bit darker than our Crocodile Dundee. Like Crocodile Dundee had like Squid Game feels a little like, okay, hi, we're South Korea, and by the way, you've been concentrating on North Korea, but we're thinking some pretty fucked up shit here too.
Well, South Korea though, like has been. Cinematically, they've been kind of ahead of the game for a while now, like starting with The Host and then Parasite and stuff. So this has been a long time in the coming.
But I guess this is more in that field of mainstream popular entertainment. Yeah.
This next letter is from James, who's a chiropractor. Uh-huh. So he's come up with a slogan.
Okay.
what are you going to say? We'll keep malpracticing.
So they keep anti-vaxxing.
Sorry, chiropractors out there. No. You are real doctors.
You know what the thing is also that I would say that it's bad chiropractors that good chiropractors would hate even more so than everybody else, right? It's the dodgy end of being a chiropractor that's making the rest of them look bad.
There's good car salesmen. There's good real estate agents, Will. There's good politicians.
Absolutely good chiropractors out there.
So a bit late to the party. Here's my slogan for fellow chiropractors. We keep on blank, so they keep on blank. And the clue for that is that we keep on simile for chatting. A fun.
I got it.
Okay.
We keep on yakking, so they keep on cracking.
Correct. Well done. You're really good at the slogan. I guess you do Gruen. It sort of like hones you for this, doesn't it? Just like advertising slogans. You get it. You've worked with too many creatives now. Okay, this is from Chris. He says, listening to Playgrounds for Playing, we talk about a musical equivalent to Van Halen in a 91 Back to the Future. So for people who haven't heard that episode, I was suggesting that scene in Back to the Future where Marty McFly goes back and convinces George McFly is from the future because he plays in Van Halen and the music is so foreign to George, like it freaks him out. Is there equivalent today? Mm. Now, when we recorded that, we couldn't really come up with one. We're like, oh no, music's, you know, hasn't changed that much. But then as soon as we stopped recording, I thought of one, and Chris is sort of the same artist. You can't tell me some awful shit like Skillrex wouldn't terrify someone from that time. Any of that shit from the last 5 years, it sounds like a fire engine giving birth to an ambulance would work. Just that, or have a 5-minute conversation about climate change or the pandemic, that'll sort it out.
So, yeah, no, you're right. Like a Skrillex or like a...
Oh, did what I say? Skillrex. I said Skillrex. I'm the oldest man in the world. Skillrex. I do need to get glasses. I'm putting it off big time and I'm trying to read this monitor.
You know, you ain't Rex. Skrillex. He's real skilled at being a DJ. Skillrex.
If you, well, when we start our blue collar crew, I'm going to call myself Skillrex and I'll be wearing all my hard jacket.
Not Skrillex. Rex. Absolutely not related to Skrillex in any way.
Skillrex.
Skillrex.
Yeah, that would be, that sounds like futuristic brain melting something, I reckon, if you heard that in 1991.
Yeah, I guess anything with a sample.
Boom, boom.
I mean, even anything with a sample. Like, if you played the Frontier Psychiatrist by, like, the Avalanches, I think that would be, like, because it's all, you know, recordings and voices and samples. I think that would sound very futuristic.
Hang on. But 91, wasn't that the era of Jive Bunny?
So we send him back a Jive Bunny. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying Jive Bunny was in 1991. Like, you're not, if you hear the Avalanches, it's only, what, 10 years in the future. That's going to be like, oh, this is, sounds a bit like Jive Bunny. Jive Bunny got their act together.
I mean, I guess you could, like, relate it to, but I, that's why I think it's not too foreign. Like, it's a clearly an advanced version of something that already exists. Whereas, if you played Skrillex to people from, like, that era, then I think that there would be, you'd be like, no, this is just the alarm going off in your phone. Do you know what I mean? Like, you yeah, wouldn't necessarily right. recognize that it is music.
What about, like, something from the Nine Inch Nails? They have some pretty heavy industrial stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, don't play Closer. I think that would just weird out George McFly.
That's the only thing that you said.
You want to whop me like a what?
That's it. This is the only proof I have that I'm from the future. So you're going to have to sit through it.
John writes in, hey, Charlie and Will, after listening to today's episode, The Anchorman, where you discussed the idea of turning on a device with messages from the future and how many messages would come through, reminded me of the poor lady who Charlie doxed with a fax machine. So I've set out to make my new movie, Fax to the Future, where a mysterious time traveler, played by a Clausen type, entrusts his fax messages to a lady in the shop, but she soon discovers they are messages from the future. Thanks for all the free funny. Love from your Irish listener. Well, top of the morning to you.
May your potatoes be plenty and bountiful, as you are fond of saying.
I hope you are you found the person who took your lucky charms. I'm half Irish. I can make those jokes. Yeah. It's my people.
Yeah.
That's our word.
Look, I'm a white Australian, so chances are there's some Irish in there somewhere.
Okay. What do we think of this idea, Facts to the Future? I think it's got legs.
Yeah, I agree.
As a comedy, I could see it as a kind of like Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen.
It's a woman who's got like she's getting these faxes from the future, but she's annoyed by it because she's trying to run her news agency.
Yeah, she's...
She's not in the solving crimes from the future business, but she has this fax machine that keeps getting these mysterious faxes and it annoys the shit out of her.
That is brilliant. So she's just taken over this news agent. Maybe she just split from her husband. You know, she's in a shitty mood. She's taken over this thing. She's going to try and make this news. She's never run a shop before. And, you know, as she's clearing up the back room, she finds this old fax machine, blows the dust off it, doesn't realize that it's a bit of high grade, military tech that was left there by accident. And it was like this experimental fax machine that was taking messages from their agent in the future. And so she plugs it in and it comes through and it's basically Quantum Cop. It's Quantum Cop is sending back.
Okay. You know what? The dude, she buys the store from the dude who died.
That was his cover, right?
He's the guy who's invented the future fax machine, dude. And he's been living in this news agency. It's a good cover to have that sort of equipment out the back. And he's just been using it to, and then he dies. She takes over the estate. She finds it out the back.
Okay. And so what is the issue? She's got to have a goal and these faxes have got to get in the way of that. So if you were,
Well, her goal is to survive because she's a single mother now and she's trying to run a news agency.
Yeah. And she's getting these panicked messages from the future about humanity being at stake. She gets annoyed.
Right. Because remember with the lady who we annoyed, wasn't she hearing the phone ring or whatever
from her house
or something like that?
Night and day.
So this is what, so it kind of has that horror, just mysteriously, the fax machine starts ringing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not even plugged in. Do you know what
that's
I mean?
That's perfect. Yeah. Because our future tech, they don't even use
They don't need a plug.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it'd be ridiculous to rely on just a plug for this device, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then I think you need to bring in another character because this guy, who's this guy sending this? Who is the contact point who's meant to be getting these messages, Looper?
Right.
So the guy is coming to the news agent to get, he's got to get the, because there you've got a conflict because he wants these faxes, but she's just annoyed that who's this guy who keeps faxing me? So, and then I think they can go on an adventure together. Maybe a love story. I like those movies where in a lazier film, they would make them fall in love, but they never do. They don't like each other, but they have a begrudging respect for each other by the end, but it never goes further. We never see them kiss or there's never kind of some confession or anything like that. They just two different people who find a common cause.
Okay. I'm fine with that. That feels okay to me, but so he's got to recruit her because she's the one who's standing in between him. But how could she realistically be standing between like a a spy type person, like, you know, assuming that, like, what stops him from just coming in and being able to access this fax machine?
I reckon we just build in some kind of convenient tech where, because she was the one who turned it on, the fax got coded to her. So you can't actually read the faxes unless you have, like, the coding with it, like that. She when she pressed the power button, it implanted a nanobot under her skin.
Nanobots, yeah. That's good. We'll use the universal Hollywood language of yada, 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 plot point, and blame it on nanobots. Definitely nanobots.
So it implants a nanobot in her, which then moves up her bloodstream to her cornea. And so she's the only person. It just looks like a blank sheet to him. So he needs her to translate the faxes to him.
Oh, that's great. Only she can read the faxes. Yeah. Like it's like invisible ink to everybody else. Because people can't understand at the start. Because she's getting these mysterious messages. Because I think she should get the messages a bit before he turns up, right? And she's getting these mysterious messages. And we can play it a bit like no one's believing her. Because when they look at the pieces of paper, they see a blank page. And she's just come out of this relationship. And, like, you know, everything's been going wrong in her life.
How about this? It's like They Live, that great scene in They Live where Roddy Piper starts putting on the glasses for the first time and seeing all the billboards obey. So for her, it is like a horror film because she's getting these like almost like threatening messages coming through, like all humanity will die, blah, 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 blah. And she's showing them to people and no one can kind of understand what she's talking about. And the great thing is because she doesn't know she has had the corneal implant, she's seeing and you don't see it. No, it's blank paper as far as I'm concerned. The one guy who believes her is the agent. So she needs his help.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Now she has a reason to be with him as
that's right.
See, screenwriting.
Well, that's the first act. I mean, we've come up with the premise. What happens in the second act? So they've got to work out. I reckon it's a film where they're not going to be able to travel into the future, but this person's sending them messages. It's whether or not you can trust him. Maybe it starts off where you think that he's being helpful. They're stopping, you know, whatever kind of assassinations or whatever. But then suddenly maybe they're being manipulated. And maybe rather than the contact point, it's actually AI from the future who wants them to do all these things so they can ensure that the robots take over. Or if the AI is working for an evil entity or something like that. That's what it should be. It's a good film. I want to see it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm in.
Let's not call it. Copyright Tofop. I don't know if that saves us in any way, but you can't steal that. Facts to the Future? We'll workshop the name. I don't know. I want to call it Facts to the Future.
Yeah, working title. Yeah. Probably wouldn't actually, legally, we probably wouldn't be able to do it.
This next bit of mail is from Jocelyn. Subject line, growlers and bikinis, but not like that. Mm-hmm. Hello, gents. My job is to teach people about beer. No, really. Since both of you have made your anti-craft beer stance fairly clear, I don't know I'm anti-craft beer. I think we mock what is easily mocked about craft beer and hipsters. I don't know that I'm anti-craft beer. Are you anti-craft beer?
Am I? I mean, not entirely, but like I'm not definitely all in on it either. So
no, I'm not a connoisseur. I don't think I really order craft beers unless I don't know if there's nothing else I recognize at the bar. But I wouldn't throw it in the bar person's face, for instance.
No, and if it were the only beer available, I would absolutely happily have a craft beer. But if I haven't been drinking, but like when I was drinking a lot of beer, you know what? That's not true. It depends what you mean by craft beer. Like I would drink things that were like a little crafty. Like that's what
she's crafty.
Like. I don't like full on crafty. I don't feel like crafty to the point where you're like, well, that was more like a meal than a drink. Like that's not what I want. But I want like a touch of crafty. I don't want traditional. I don't want to be drinking a VB. I want like whatever hint craft beer that VB bought and thought was commercially available.
Jocelyn continues. You probably hate what I do, but if you want to come along anyway, the company, and we'll give a free plug, is called Hop On Brewery Tours. It's still worth noting that the big refillable glass flagons you see for sale at breweries, which is 1.8 litres, are called growlers. Oh. Were you aware of that?
I was not. No, I've never been on a brewery tour. Beer tour. I don't think.
No.
I mean, I think I've been on a couple of like breweries, but I don't think I've ever been on like a proper like.
What do you mean? Why? Oh, yeah, no, I went to the Guinness Brewery in when I was in Dublin. Because
oh yeah, me too. Okay, yeah, no, I went to the Guinness Brewery. That's true.
Yeah. What did you think?
Whatever, it's a fact.
Yes, you talked it up a bit. It's like, I mean, how many floors do you want to put like the beer making process on? I reckon like one room would do.
It's like, have you been to the Cadbury factory in Tasmania? Have you ever been did you ever do a school excursion to the Cadbury factory? Yeah, guess what that is? A factory. You get some free chocolate at the end. That bit's great, but we could skip straight to that bit as far as I'm concerned. Same with the Guinness factory.
And this is where we underpay our workers and stop them from joining a union. okay, why are they called growlers? The story goes that in the early 1800s, pintails, pitchers, glass jars or jugs or other vessels were used to carry beer home from the local pub. These growlers supposedly got their name because as the beer sloshed around, it caused the carbon dioxide to escape and created a growling noise. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard my beer make any kind of noise.
I've heard my body make a lot of noises after having the beer.
My relationship with beer these days, I still like the flavor of it, but I can have one. I always say to Jim, the first one's great, and then anything after that, I just feel so bloated and gross and full, and I don't know what happened to me. I actually went out. I had drinks on Friday night for the first time in so long, and I didn't even have that much. I reckon I had four drinks, and I was hungover the next day. I couldn't believe it. I was so annoyed that, like, what's happened to my ability to tolerate alcohol? It's just completely decreased.
Oh, I mean, I've kind of, no, I don't want to like make a big deal about it, but I just haven't been drinking for ages. And the longer it goes, like I had one drink with dinner the other night, which was like my first drink in like 6 months or whatever. And I was kind of like, I mean, I don't know if I'm, I mean, who knows? Who fucking knows? I'll probably be blind drunk in 3 weeks, you know, but.
Nowadays, you would buy a growler and fill it with beer at a local brewery. It reduces waste, ensures you're getting the freshest product and is great merch. 2 liters of beer. I don't think there would be any instance, even in my 20s, where I would consume 2 liters of beer. I don't think. That seems like a lot.
How much is in a can?
Like, what, 375?
Okay.
So 6 cans?
So
or just under 6?
Oh, great.
Around about a 6-pack.
Adam Spencer right now losing his mind.
Imagine the fun I have trying to teach our guests about growlers, the beer kind, where there is constant sniggering from 30 to 40 to 50-year-old men. All good, though. I am aware of what I've got myself into when I start the story. Do you have to refer to it as growlers? That would be, I mean, is it that important to the narrative? If she just said to me, this glass here, it's called a flagon, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that word before. It makes sense. Yeah. The fact that you're referencing some rare slang from the 1800s, like, come on. I don't think you have to. Just I would check with your boss. I reckon maybe you could exercise that part from your speech that you have to give these people on the tour and they'd be fine with it.
I know, but I understand when you're like, well, we were growlers first. Like your definition of growler like has come along and overtaken our definition of growler.
Well, yeah, but...
we're the original growlers.
Mate, not even she had...
the good name of growlers.
Not even she had stuck with their name when things turned bad. Even they had the common sense to go, you know what? It's fine, guys. We'll change our name. Regarding G-string bikinis, all right, so Jocelyn's taken a left turn here, that harken back to the Cindy Crawford era, it is a fashion statement that has overlapped into necessity, because it's so popular. It's almost impossible to walk into a shop and buy a normal bikini that doesn't crawl up your ass or stretch over your belly button. I just want something to cover my cheeks and sit on my hips that is so passe and difficult to find. Many wear those string bikinis by choice, or many wear them due to lack of choice. I think men will never know the pain of changing fashion trends. Thank you for all the hours of entertainment and for keeping me laughing as I toddle from Brisbane and around the Goldie. Okay. Specific Queenslander. Well done. You know what I've also noticed with the G-string kind of phenomena is there's wetsuits, essentially, like steamers. Mm-hmm. You'll see surfers. And so it's like full sleeve, you know, arms and up to the neck, and then it gets down to the waist and it's a G-string wetsuit. And I'm like, I don't understand what is going on here.
Yeah,
I mean, don't necessarily dislike it, but I don't understand what's going on here.
I just want to know whose decision it was. You know, was it something that the women who would wear those out into the surf were demanding? If so, absolutely 110% I am behind that. Like, if that's your thing, it's more comfortable, you feel better, whatever. Like, absolutely. But as our correspondent may have suggested, that it's something that is being forced upon the majority of people because somebody else made a decision, then that's, yeah. It
seems unfair.
Yeah, it seems a little unfair, I would have thought. Of all things, a wetsuit. It's just one of those things that is mostly made for practicality. Do you know what I mean? Like, it covers all of you. That's kind of the point.
This is from Jen. Hi, guys. I've been a teabagger since the beginning, and I still listen every week, though recently I've fallen a few weeks behind, and I'm at the point where you speculate on Hollywood using TOEFOP's podcast instead of paying writers. Yeah, that's one of our probably most far-fetched gripes, is that we get poached for ideas by Hollywood.
Well, wait until we see Facts to the Future.
I actually, look, copyright TOEFOP, I actually think it's a really solid idea. And I know that the certain production companies are looking for romantic comedies. And I think that one would be quite good. Anyway, copyright TOEFOP, copyright TOEFOP. How many times, if I say it three times in a mirror, does that make it legal? I have an example a little closer to home. Just before we plummeted back into lockdown, I was lucky enough, after three reschedules, to finally get to see the stage play of Bluey with my four-year-old. Now, listeners for TOEFOP might not know that Bluey is Will's nemesis, the only show to outright Gruen on the ABC. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you know, in kids, like, let's be honest, like, kids don't care.
Mate, I've got to say, I've been watching a lot of Bluey, and it's really good. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I know adults think that Bluey's great, and that's fine, but Bluey's not a real person. Bluey's a cartoon girl, I believe. Cartoon, like, I don't even know the story of Bluey. Like, for ages, I thought Bluey was a cop, and then, like, Bluey is not a cop in any way.
Bluey's a girl.
That's Paw Patrol or something, right? Yeah.
Not the cop. Girls can't
girls
be cops.
Can be cops.
Now, I don't want to give any spoilers here, but there is a fairly decent subplot which involves grass grubs. And in my 35 years, it's only the second time I've heard of these. Oh. The first being episode 331 of TOEFOP. Mm-hmm. For the rest of the show, I couldn't help but wonder if one of the writers was also a teabagger taking inspiration from Charlie's misadventures. Mm. And with a new season of Bluey on the horizon, I will definitely be on alert for any TOEFOP adjacent storylines. Mm. The second there is a bin dispute, I will know that there is a conspiracy, that this conspiracy theory is true. Thanks for all the laughs. Hope you're keeping well in this extraordinary world that is 2021.
Well, I'll go. I want to go like a full QAnon conspiracy on
go
this.
Go down the rabbit hole.
Okay. So why is Bluey called Bluey? What is the reason that Bluey
She's
is called
Bluey?
She's
a blue healer. They're part of the
right. Who was on Blue? Who was on the TV show Blue Healers?
Yeah, not me.
Right. So this is somebody who's obviously been doing some research by watching Blue Healers, like, to research for the show, and then has, like, stumbled upon you, found out you've got a podcast, is listening to our podcast, and much like Hollywood, is ripping off our ideas.
Well, you know what? The sort of one of the ongoing storyline.
Now, Bluey is your nemesis too.
one of the ongoing storylines of Bluey is, like, it's her relationship with her father. It's one of the best things about the show is the way it positively portrays the relationship a father can have with his daughters. Like, this is a father who's constantly available, supportive of Bluey in every way, doesn't try and restrict her, you know, when she has emotional outbursts. It's really beautifully written relationship. But he's also a bit of a dorky dad who gets into mishaps all the time. And you can do an entire episode around, his name's Bandit, around his mishaps. And in many ways, I have watched Bluey, and Iona will often look to me after watching an episode of Bluey and call me Bluey Dad, as in the Bluey, the dad I see on TV, it reminds me a lot of you. So I don't think it is.
Staring at this, when Bandit's on, she's like, that's you, yeah. Dad. That is you. You are a classic Bandit.
I mean, she also watches Peppa Pig, and when she watches that, she turns to me and calls me Daddy Pig. I'm like, what the hell? What did you call me? Okay. So I think so. I mean, look, the grass grubs thing is weird because I had never heard of grass grubs prior to that happening. And the fact that Bluey, and there is enough connection, you're an ABC employee, I think that there could have been, we were slagging off in all, you know, good humor and jest. We were slagging off Bluey a little while back. Maybe someone passed that episode on to a
media
writer.
Media monitors over at Bluey HQ.
Yeah,
are like
the Google alerts.
Is Anderson talking shit about us again?
Imagine if we got into a full-blown, like, hip-hop style beef with Bluey. Like they released like a little 30-second animation of like Blue just being like, fuck Tofop or something like that. You know, they bleep out fuck.
I only ever, for any of these things, our rule at Gruen is I will only ever get into fights with people that I actually absolutely love. Like, you know, that I couldn't possibly be in a fight with. So the other one's Ando. Like the amount of jokes I've made about Ando and Arn's, like, where it's like, it would seem like I had a real feud with Arn. I love Arn. Before he was, like, famous, used to open for me and stuff. He was, like, he's a cool guy. But, like, Bluey and Arn are on my hit list.
Well, what about Joe Rogan? I mean, you're in a feud with him now, right?
Oh, man. Like, this week, it felt like I actually was in a feud with Joe Rogan.
It was awesome.
Like, certainly some of the comments I was getting from, like, Joe Rogan fans, like, they were, like, I picked a fight with Joe
Rogan. But you didn't actually comment anything. You just retweeted the tweet, right? You didn't actually say anything.
So for people that don't know what the story was, like, there was an ad made by Paper Moose, who are the agency, like, on Gruen for the first episode. We set them the challenge to convince the people who can't be convinced when it comes to vaccines. And so they made this fictional ad about a guy, Jazz Tremlow, who people might know, the comedian, and very funny performance by him. And he is dying of some sort of allergic attack in a cafe. And somebody goes to give him an EpiPen, and he starts asking the series of questions that anti-vaxxers might ask about, like, the vaccines. You know, what brand is it? Where were they made? What were the blind trials? Blah, blah, blah. And then the final sort of punchline, as he's, like, gasping for his final breath, is, like, what did Joe Rogan say? Someone called Joe. And Joe Rogan posted that on his... In fact, this is... Did you read what he actually said when
yes.
he posted it?
Yeah.
Because
Australia's mishandled the pandemic and this is propaganda and blah, blah, blah.
I will read it out because it is just so amazing. Like, if it's still up on his page, let's see if he's left it up there or has he actually finally put it down. Oh, he might have actually finally put it down. Interesting.
Podcast Mike, okay. Can you find the what he wrote on Instagram?
Oh no, there it is. No, still got it here. Okay, so firstly, there's 22,000 comments. I have not read any of them because I feel like that would not be a good place for me to spend my time. But this was what he posted. Not only has Australia had the worst reaction to the pandemic. Now, Charlie, let's just fact check this on the way through. Do you believe that Australia has had the worst reaction to the pandemic?
No, I don't believe so. And think in terms of like numbers of hospitalization and deaths per capita, we're actually done all right.
Yeah, one of the best, in fact, I would have said. With dystopian police state measures.
Someone follows Avi Yemeni on Instagram, I'm feeling like. Rebel News is in the feed.
That are truly inconceivable to the rest of the civilized world.
No, I don't think
so. No, they're not. Pretty standard stuff, to be honest. But they have the dumbest propaganda. And then he posts
that sentence there is chef's kiss. The dumbest propaganda. Like the levels of irony in that, it would make Alanis Morissette blush.
Mate, the work that he has done here, like for a guy who is all about do your own research, and this ad is playing on the idea that Joe Rogan is the do your own research guy. To not do his own research, to not check that it was a real ad, to post it. And so this is the best bit. Edit 2 hours later. Apparently this is not a real ad. It's from a satirical show. Now, this week I had to talk to a lot of people about that. Like a lot of people wanted to talk about it on the radio and stuff like that when I was doing Gruen promotion. And like I wasn't out in any way to start a beef with Joe Rogan. Like I didn't do this. Like, we made an ad and like then Joe Rogan did not check to see if it was a real ad. And this is a guy who is constantly like spreading a whole bunch of opinions about like what Australia is going through that are just absolutely not true. And around vaccines that are absolutely not true and really fucking dangerous in some cases. And then suddenly I was in trouble with his fans because they, it turns out, for people who purport to be fans of comedians, cannot take a joke.
A little sensitive.
Oh, my fucking God.
Yeah, it was funny. I did see, though, there was a comment under one of the tweets, and I love this. Like, no matter what side of the argument you fall upon, when you were discussing a very famous person or, you know, someone who has done something stupid or tweeted something stupid, there's always someone in the comments who's like, who? And I'm like, come on, dude. Even if you hate Joe Rogan, you can't argue that he is not incredibly well known, like the most popular podcast in the world. So dismissing that with a who is like, come on, you're being silly now.
Yeah, 200 million downloads a week. Like, his Instagram has nearly 14 million followers. So he posted that to half of the Australian population.
Great promo for Gruen.
Great promo for Gruen, but not a great promo for Joe Rogan as a trusted source of information, I would suggest.
Who would have thunk it? The guy who thinks the moon landings were faked. Who would have thunk it? Let's do one bit of mail, Will, and get out of here. And if you want to send us a mail, the best way to do that is to go to tofop.com. There is a contact. Actually, not if you're a Joe Rogan fan. I've got a feeling when this episode comes out, might be hearing.
No, it's fine. I understand what your opinions are. You can keep them to yourself. Yes, Joe Rogan has more podcast downloads than we do. I understand. I know how numbers work.
Well, I clearly don't, because Adam Spencer corrects me every bloody week. But if you do want to send us some other correspondence unrelated to the Gruen fake ad, you can at tofop.com. And while you're there, check out some of our other great podcasts. Who is on Willosophy this week, Will?
On Willosophy this week, an absolute legend of Australian comedy, I would say. Kaz Cook, journalist, writer, cartoonist, radio host, TV presenter. Like, she's done it all, and she's done it all in absolutely fantastic manner. She has a new book out called You're Wrong, which is a history of women being told that they're wrong about things, and it's super funny and super entertaining, and it's a really great chat with Kaz Cook. But we are also, up until Christmas, doing a whole bunch of Willosophy episodes. So if you haven't had a listen to Willosophy for a while, there are so many good episodes coming out over the next few weeks.
And on FOFOP this week, my guest is a up-and-coming comedian you may have heard of. His name is David Anthony.
Oh, yes, really? Yeah.
Now, I was going to send you a message about this to see if it was okay, because he is your guest Charlie number one. But I've been meaning to get Dave on. I tried to get him on an Instagram Live a while back, and we just couldn't line it up. So I was desperate to talk to him. Are there any ground rules? I know I'm sort of stepping into your turf here. Is there anything that you don't want me to discuss? Is there anything that you feel like is your territory and you don't want me leveraging off, like, you know, the banter you have with Dave?
I like this interesting take on generosity you have. It's like, you've come into my house, you're like, I'm going to fuck your wife, but is there any way you'd particularly like me to fuck your wife?
Well, I'm inclusive with my cucks.
It's your house. If you just... Well, to be honest, mate. No. Of course, just have your own conversation. Like, Here's what I will say is, there'll just be certain areas that you don't want to get into.
No, I'm,
like, unless you want it to completely go in that direction. That's all I would say.
I've got a list stuck to my wall of things that I'm going to try to avoid, and politics and whether or not the basketball is rigged is one that will stay away from. All right, our final bit of mail, and thank you to everyone who sent this mail in. When we finish this episode, we're going to jump across to our Patreon and record a special Patreon mailbag episode, because that mailbag is bulging as well. If you want to join our Patreon, I'd highly encourage it. You get to see full videos of the episodes every week. We upload them to our Patreon, plus bonus episodes, plus artwork. James and I were working on the final installment or the penultimate, using that word correctly for the first time, installment of Quantum Cop. Don't know where it's at. James, I know you listen to this because you're doing the artwork. Where are we at with Quantum Cop? Can we give people like a deadline of where they might be able to see it? Don't want to put any more pressure on you, but just give me a ballpark. 6 months, a year, 5 years.
Also, James is currently working on my new show art for my tour for next year. So
behind that,
rethink some priorities.
Okay. The other thing I want to talk about, Patreon. Oh, yes. To all our Patreon subscribers, I know it's been a backlog waiting for your top-tier prizes. They've all been sent. And if there's anyone who hasn't received their posters or doesn't receive in the next few weeks, just let me know. I've just been emailing with a bunch of you who haven't got stuff. So I'm going to try and get them out as quickly as possible. But I think I sent out like 30 posters and a bunch of fridge magnets last week. So they are coming. And now, final bit of mail, Will. This is from Megan. Hi, Will and Charlie. I've been listening to you guys for 5 years. I've only recently become a Patreon subscriber. Good way to go out.
Thank you.
So, firstly, I just want to say a big thanks for all the laughs over the years. The first episode I have strong memories of involved you analysing the lyrics of Orinoco Flow by Enya. That's what really cemented that for me, that I'd arrived home podcast-wise. It appealed to my sense of humour so perfectly. I thought, finally, here is a podcast for me. I had a similar moment listening to your most recent episode when you both started talking about how much you love Officeworks. Despite Charlie's unfortunate experience, by the way, being caught crouching on the floor with a hole punch sounded like one of my worst nightmares, and I'm surprised you survived it, Charlie. But it seems like your technique worked, and I may have to use it in the future. I love Officeworks, and whenever I'm in there, I get an overwhelming desire to buy all kinds of exotic and unnecessary stationery. I already own way too many empty notebooks and colorful pens, but who knew manila folders came in so many colors? It is intoxicating.
Yeah, I hear. I'm with you. Same.
As a woman in my late 20s, maybe it's odd to have such a moment of kinship with two men in their 40s talking about stationery. Oh, fuck. When the Roganites come for us, they're going to tear us apart. Like, listen to that description of us. Like, we can't fight. We can't hunt. We talk about how much we love stationery. We're dead, mate. Love stationery and analysing song lyrics in far more depth than ever intended. They're some of the things that bind us together as humans. Yeah, that's the message of Tofop, man. We keep on shoving, so you keep on loving? Shoving shit? No, 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 no.
Oh, boy. No, I don't. Can we have the loving without the shoving, please?
More cushion. Less pushing. On a more serious note, thank you for all the hard work you do getting this podcast up so regularly. It's got me through some very hard times, especially in the last couple of years. So thanks, guys. Megan. Well, thank you, Megan, and thank you to everyone who wrote in, and thank you to everyone who's listening. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Alanison.